It's a pleasure to be joined by the great Phil Simms. And Phil, I want to begin by talking about when you and Jim first felt that Carr's injury was going to be significant. The directors, people coming to you, and you knew that something bad was going on with the quarterback of the Raiders.
Oh, man, when did we know? I think I knew by his facial expression, and then I could read his lips. And then I did Showtime last night. I don't know if you saw it.
I did.
But he says it's broke. It's broke or whatever. It's broke. He knew it right away. So, unfortunately, I know that situation. And the player, and when you talk about NFL players or professional athletes, for sure, they know their bodies. They know when something is, you know, past that point, it hurts, and when something's really wrong. And, yeah, so, listen, I've done a lot of games in the NFL, and that moment and that crowd and that team and everything, I've never been in a place where it changed so dramatically after just a few seconds. So, and, hey, I'm a fan, and it was really sad to see.
Phil, same with me. I had my 15-year-old son with me, and I've been at countless games, and I saw you play throughout your career, and it's remarkable when a team wins a football game and everyone was leaving the parking lot or going to BART and to try to get out of that parking lot in that situation. You could hear a pin drop, and at that moment, the Raiders really had to look at Matt McGloin and say, next man up. But one more thing on Derek Carr. Where did you have him in regards to his progression this year, the MVP conversation, and what his future looks like after having successful surgery yesterday?
Oh, look, his future is great. Nothing in this surgery or this injury is going to derail anything he does in the future. In the MVP race, you know, I hadn't really thought about it in those terms because there's so much going on. He was having a tremendous year, and like I said during the game, you know, and I even said it about Andrew Luck, is that they're playing for the right coach, the right coordinator, and I really mean the right coordinator, which is so important to any quarterback in the NFL, their career and what they do. And it was all set up, man. They had it all, the receivers, the run, the offensive line. So a lot to look forward to for him going forward. And, look, you know, Derek Carr, sure, his name is going to be right up there with about three or four other guys for the MVP of the NFL.
Phil Simms is our guest. Phil, when you went down at Buffalo and Haas took over, I know you made, you know, you've accounted for the differences and great teammates that you had with the Giants back in the day. The Raiders, with Carr going down, have six Pro Bowl starters there, also the alternates. Any similarity at all? Because I remember when Haas was a third-string quarterback, and was it true that he was thinking about stepping away from the game because he wasn't going to get playing time? Is there any fair comparison to Haas and Matt McGloin?
You know, it's funny. You're bringing up things they brought up to me on Showtime, and I said, it's tough to compare. I said, first off, Jeff Hostetler is a better quarterback than Matt McGloin, and that is not to slight him. I mean, Jeff Hostetler won a Super Bowl and had some good years with the Giants after he left the Giants, you know, out there in Oakland. And overall, I think our team was a more playoff-ready team to go win the Super Bowl than probably the Raiders were. So it's great to compare and say those things, but that year, so the Raiders are having a great year. But we had a tremendous defense. We controlled the clock like nobody else. We had the fewest turnovers in the history of the league at the time. We were the leading scoring team on opening drives in NFL games, and we gave up 0 points on opening drives. So just those numbers alone tells you why we had a good year and why we had a team that was going to be tough in the playoffs. Now, notwithstanding, the Raiders got a lot of tremendous parts, but anytime you lose somebody, and Matt McGloin, I like a lot of things about him. I know a lot about him. I've watched almost every one of his throws in preseason. But in Derek Carr, the gap between Derek Carr and Matt McGloin is definitely bigger than it was for me to Jeff Hostetler, that's for sure.
Phil Simms joins us. Phil, in the Sunday night game where the Raiders beat the Broncos and they controlled the ball for over 40 minutes, 200 yards rushing. It's really simple for us on the outside, and you'll be on the call with Jim and Tracy again, to think that the Raiders just, and Bill Musgrave, follow the exact blueprint and try to run the ball and set up down and distance and some easy throws from McGloin. How easy will that be for the Raiders on the road at Denver?
Well, it's going to be rough. And, you know, I expect it to be rough. I really do. and the Raider defense is going to have to be outstanding. It's good timing by you. I just finished watching the Oakland Raiders offense against that Denver defense, and they did a lot of good things. They kept Derek Carr on the move. They got rid of the football quick. They were chipping Von Miller. They had the extra offensive lineman in there. Donald Penn was he was the star of the game. I mean, he was. I almost want to go see him and say, is that the best run-blocking game you've ever had in your life? Because, man, he was crushing people. So a lot of things went their way. And so Denver didn't have Aqib Talib in the game. They didn't have Kayvon Webster, one of their backup corners that wasn't there. So nothing is easy when it comes to throwing the football against the Denver Broncos. So to say that we're going to go out there and we're going to give them a couple of easy throws, there's no such thing. They contest every throw. They play so much man-to-man. And they did play some zone against the Raiders. Why? Because the Raiders were running the ball, so they were trying to, like, well, let's protect our corners a little and see if we can get everybody else to attack the line of scrimmage. So it was a tremendous game plan, but it'll be a game plan, especially with Matt McGloin in there, JT, that Denver's going to be ready for this time.
Phil, you're in the middle of your prep for this game, but what are you guessing or what do you assume as a former star player in this league that the Broncos are playing for? That was a tough loss to Kansas City. Kansas City really rubbed it in at the end. They're playing for pride, but also Lynch might come in and play a little quarterback with Trevor Siemian. What is the mindset you believe for the Broncos for this last game of the year?
Man, it's like I can't think of the movie. Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman, Minnesota Fat.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Hustler.
Fast and loose, Fat Man. Here we go. I mean, that's what you got to think if you're the Denver Broncos. And you know, yeah, everybody goes, oh, they got nothing to lose. Hey, listen, pride, winning the game, competition, everything. While you're in NFL, it will show for the Denver Broncos. They will not ever, I think, in this game, get out of control or just give up, or, Gary Kubiak's not going to lose control of this team. That is not going to happen. And so it's going to be tough for the Oakland Raiders. And the big thing is, remember, it's at Denver. And look, I've been in those games where we had nothing to play for at the end of the year, and playing against a team that was fighting for a week off of the Houston Oilers back in, I'm going to say 91.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat them, and we were playing terrible. And they were playing for a week off the number two seed, the whole thing. And they came in, they were flat, we beat them. And so you'd never know. It is the NFL, and I really do expect Denver to be emotionally ready to play the Oakland Raiders because, nothing like spoiling somebody's meal, the dinner, whatever you want to say. I think that's the mindset Denver's going to have.
Wrapping it up with Phil Simms. Phil, when you played the greatest game of your life in the Super Bowl, the completion percentage, what people still talk about today, did you prep any differently for that Super Bowl game than you did with other playoff games against the greatest teams you ever competed against? What was different in your prep for your Super Bowl victory as a starter?
Well, really nothing. I think the difference was that we did play Denver early in the year, so I had some knowledge. And the big thing is we had 2 weeks to get ready. So everything just gets fine-tuned, and I really kind of knew what they were going to do almost in every situation. You know, you get that extra week, and you get these, even back then, you know, the breakdowns. I'm going, oh, if we get in this formation and run this, you know, play action, they're going to cover our guys exactly this way. And it kind of felt really good for us that day, of course. And, and thankfully I was on target. And I used to think, man, it was so easy. And I actually watched the tape of it about 5 years ago. And I go, wow, there were a lot of tight throws. I don't remember them being so tight. And so, but that's what it's like. But it was nothing really. If it would have been 1 week, it had just been another normal week of preparation, because that's just how it is in the NFL.
Finally, on a personal note, your son Chris, who I have as a frequent guest on my show on 95.7 The Game, the Raider flagship, and the work that he does, he is so prepped and opinionated, and he played and had a star college career and played in the NFL. When did you first sense that your son was going to be able to handle this responsibility in the media? He gets better every time I talk to him.
Probably when he was about 4 years old.
Four.
And I'm not exaggerating. He's 4 or 5 years old, and some guy was over at my house, a good friend of mine. He says, "Oh, my God, you're going to be a radio host one day," because he was already citing numbers from baseball and this and that. And, you know, you can imagine, JT. I mean, I got another son that's still down playing for the Atlanta Falcons. And my family, I have 8 brothers and sisters, and we were all sports people. And so you can imagine what we talked about at dinner every night. And we got together over Christmas holiday. On Christmas Day, I flew in here Christmas morning from out there and everything. And what do you think we talked about almost the whole time we were together? We talked about football, a little bit of basketball, a little bit of college football, but we mostly just talked about pros, and we constantly analyze and talk about it, and it's because we like it. And he really does have a great love of the game, but he has a great love of trying to understand what's going on in the game. And I was afraid he was going to be a coach, and you know, that's a tough life, and it's a great life, but he tried to get into that business. It's a tough business to get into. Really couldn't break the ranks. So I'm glad he's doing what he's doing. He really enjoys it. So I'm glad he's doing right by you, too. So that's cool.
Yeah, on a final note, on a personal note for me. So in my home, I go into my sports room, and I have a framed jersey of Jim Brown and Fred Biletnikoff and Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, and right there is the Phil Simms jersey. And I tell my kids my friends, because one of the reasons why I believe I got in broadcasting into radio is as a fan growing up and watching you play and on that Super Bowl run and what you left for the Giants and then how you conducted yourself on and off the field has had a tremendous impact on my career. So whenever I see you calling a Super Bowl or a big game, or I catch you on Showtime or whatever you're doing, remember, I always have your back because I love what you do. And I really appreciate the fact that you could recap the injury to Carr, join us here. And I look forward to seeing you down in Houston, as I know you'll be down there at Radio Row for the Super Bowl, right?
Well, I will. We're not going to be doing the game, but we'll definitely get a chance to talk at the Super Bowl and all that. I look forward to it. It's a great honor to hear those words you said about me. You know, when you put my jersey next to my early first thoughts of NFL football, my hero, Jim Brown, and who I've had a chance to interview before and talk to and everything, man, that's pretty cool. Because I remember when I was a kid, Jim Brown would be playing, because I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, so they were the local team at the time. And, you know, they'd be losing, and I'd be all upset. My dad go, "All right, boy, get on out in the yard and just play," and I, you know, whatever. We'd go out and play, and he'd yell the scores out. "The Browns just scored. Yeah, all right." And so, but great stuff. Great to hear it, and I do look forward to seeing you down.
Thank you, Phil. And we always end on this note. Just give me one quick Al Davis story on Al Davis and your relationship with him when Mr. Davis was alive.
Oh, I got many. I probably have told them to you, so I don't know if I don't want to repeat them, but he made me once write a page on 5 coaches in the NFL who I thought were going to be who could be good head coaches. So I did, and it kept me up. You know, I didn't want to be doing this on a Friday night after watching the Raiders practice. And I gave him those notes Sunday morning. He read them, and he told Jim Gray, and a couple curse words in there. "This is the crap. I already know all this crap. I thought he was going to give me something good." And I really put so much thought and work into all of it. And he just took it and just basically said, "This is crap," and threw it in the garbage. So that kind of hurt. But I had like a really cool relationship with Al Davis. And we talked from time to time. And one time we sat beside each other on a flight from New York to L.A., and I swear to you, we did not stop talking for, if we had a 10-second pause, it seemed like an hour. We talked football every second of the whole trip. It was truly great. He quizzed me. I was quizzing him. And, I mean, he was literally like going, "Okay, if it's a 4-3 and they do this, and how would you block it?" or whatever. And I'd say, "Well, this is how we were drawing up on napkins." And everything, it was really cool. It's a time that I will never forget, that trip, that's for sure.
Thanks for sharing, Phil. All the best. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again down the road. Appreciate it.
JT, thank you. Have a good day.